Hello and welcome to the HBO Boys podcast. Today we are talking about The Bear season 2 in its entirety. We've decided because we watched it all at the before we were talking just about the first episode because it at the time was all I had watched and I just didn't know when I was going to watch more. Turns out that night I watched the rest of it. In fact, I fell asleep during the last when I woke up. Sam was like, "Yeah, I got I watched all of it. It's all."
Oh, she watched it without you.
Well, I fell asleep, and she can stay up into the nether regions of the night.
Yeah.
So I then had to go back because I missed like the last four episodes. But I have now watched all of them.
Love that.
And I think I'm ready to say that this year, I think the best show so far has been Succession. I think it for writing, acting, and directing, all of those together, I think Succession is just objectively the best show on television as it comes to an end at the end of its fourth season.
Sure.
But there's a feeling I get from watching The Bear that I don't get from anything else on TV. And it does it to such a degree that I don't think I've ever gotten it from another piece of media, where as I'm watching Succession, I feel in my bones, this is so stupidly good. It doesn't it deserves to be this good, and it is this good.
Sure.
But I cannot put myself, I'm not learning lessons. I'm not I don't come to the end of an episode of Succession and think that I should be a better person. The Bear does that to me, where I watch and I look at the sign that says every second counts, and I watch a family who's in shambles but has a lot of talented people. I've talked in the past about an attribute of some of my favorite movies and television shows are competency porn. I can't even say the words, but just people being good at their jobs. I've always enjoyed watching media with that within it, especially when their personal demons are actively trying to make them bad. This show is the epitome of that. God. The second season is superb, and I hope you've watched it because I'm going to talk about it with Adam in detail here coming up.
Yeah, you know, this show came out of nowhere for me. I was told, hey, you got to watch this. You got to watch this by you. Hey, I watched The Bear. It's really good. It's wild. It'll give you anxiety, but you should watch it. And I'm so happy that I did. And, you know, this show has taken the internet by storm. Everyone's raving about it, talking about it, how, you know, all these hopeful Emmy nods that they're going to get. Potentially a win. I think there's definitely some winner performances there. Although, you know, like you said, Succession will probably take that.
They're in the comedy category, oddly enough. Oh, yeah,
they're in a different... That's right, they're in a different category.
Hey, Adam, I don't think this show is a comedy, though.
No, I don't think so either.
I've never been more anxious watching a show in my life. In fact, our good pal JR, I tried to get him to watch it, and he can't, because he's like, I'm just trying to vibe and chill, and ain't it. I totally get that. But also, you're wrong. You have to watch it. Why? Stop.
Yeah, it's worth the kind of edgier seat anxiety it gives you, because it does resolve itself eventually. And it just takes a little bit to get there, but it does it. And it does it
except
so wonderfully.
Not really, Adam, though.
No,
because,
it kind
like,
of does.
Not really, though, because the second season after ends in a moment of pure anxiety.
Yeah, that's true.
Just like freebasing anxiety.
Well, you know what? 20 minutes before the end of the episode, it's getting there.
Yeah,
it's
no.
It's like edging you to anxiety.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah,
that's fun.
It's such a good show, and it's so well written. The characters, actually, I care about them. I want them to succeed. I hate the characters you're supposed to hate. I love the characters you're supposed to love, and it is the development that we see in all these characters throughout the entire show is astronomically higher than I thought it could be for someone talking about opening a restaurant, you know? It's just, hats off off to this show. It is unbelievably good.
Yeah, the character development of Fack, even, played by Matty Matheson.
Yes.
Like, you care about him at the end. You want him to do well.
Yeah. And
he's like, he's billed seventh or eighth on this. Abby Elliott's Sugar Brizzotto is like her up and down relationship with her mother, which is brilliantly played by Jamie Lee Curtis.
And who, it's brutal, dude. It is brutal.
She needs to win something. Jamie Lee Curtis as their mother needs to win. I don't know what it is, but my God, is she like every moment she's on screen is like nails on a chalkboard in the best way.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, the actress who plays Sydney, she's going to be in everything. She's a god really dang star.
There was a couple times, though, I will admit that I thought it was a little over the top. But overall, I think she's excellent. I think she ended up being excellent.
There were a few times the second season felt over the top. I mean, they really ran up against the wall here. The amount of cameos in the second season almost felt too much. If the Christmas / family episode wasn't as insane and as like heart-wrenching as it was, the moment John Mulaney came on screen, I'd be like, well, what the fuck's John Mulaney doing here, dude?
Yeah, not only John Mulaney, he was more in the first season, but Joel McHale had a cameo in this.
Bob Odenkirk.
Molly Ringwald, Will Poulter, John Mulaney. I can't
Olivia Colman?
Yeah. Sarah Paulson. Unbelievable amount of cameos. And the thing is that they didn't hype it at all.
No.
These people weren't cameos to an extreme degree. They were playing normal people and it wasn't over the top. They didn't get too much screen time. It was perfect. I think they did it really well.
Lionel Boyce playing Marcus, when he has a good night in the last episode, but then it pans down to his phone and you get the sense that his mother has passed and that he wasn't there for it because he was working, especially after seeing him go to Copenhagen and then be with Will Poulter, who was so good.
Oh my God, he was fantastic. He was so fantastic.
Their conversation they had in that episode felt so natural.
Yeah, it really
like
did.
It felt like the least written it definitely was written. Like, they weren't improvising that, but it just felt so natural. And and then you get to the two main characters, I'll call them. Let me talk about the one who I think is less interesting first, but it's not a hit to him. It's just the fact that, anyway, Carmi. So
he's less interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's the competency porn in this show.
Sure.
He's being billed as the best cook in the world,
which is crazy. One thing.
Right. And you get more and more background over the season to how he got there and the amount of work that he put in, and Will Poulter's character saying like, yeah, I thought I was going to be the best until I met someone who I was like, oh yeah, no, he's the best. Yeah. And then you get in a later episode, Richie's episode, the idea that who he was talking about was obviously Carmi. And Carmi is a great character. It's the perfect encapsulation of he is the best in the world at something, and he's constantly trying to self-sabotage himself against his will, almost.
Yeah, and it's really sad. It's sad that, you know, we learn of his, you know, unneeding ability to have a relationship. He does not care about people in his life. He only cares about his craft. And there was one episode, I think it was actually the final episode, where he's like, people just get in the way of what I'm good at, and people get in the way of what I want to do and complete and be the best, and I just can't have that, and I don't want that. I don't want relationships. I don't want people there unless I need them there.
Yeah, but to be fair, he was locked in a fridge and that was his fault.
He was locked in a fridge, but I don't think it's wrong, man.
No.
He fell apart when the girl came in.
I know. I think it actually, it brings up an interesting topic, which is, do you need to be singular? Do you need to be just cut off people's heads around you and trample over them to get to your goals, to reach said goals? I think it's a very masculine way to go about things. shows. I think it's a very like misogynistic and
sure.
It's dudes being dicks, but also turns out they're very good at cooking. Is them being that good at cooking make it okay for them to treat everyone around them poorly? I don't know. How's that crepe?
Yeah, it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, turns out the crepe is so good, you can be mean to me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a personality thing. I'm sure in reality, there are people like this. I'm 100% sure. But but there's also people who can juggle both things and still be exceptional at something, but maybe not quite as exceptional as he is.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting trope that is both a trope and sometimes reality, which is this idea that you have to be completely myopic to succeed. And the false correlation of, hey, when I only focus on this one thing, I tend to be very good at it, and I just don't know another way.
Yeah, it's like the only thing they know.
Right. It's the only way they've ever succeeded. And then they try to add other things into that mix. And yeah, it's going to be different. You have to adapt to a new situation. Turns out, like, the people who are maybe the best chefs in the world, adapting isn't... Like, adapting with your knives and with the burners in the kitchen is one thing, but adapting to change in your real life, in your personal relationships, is... Mm-hmm. Perhaps much harder, especially when being so good at this. Like, I think of it like an NBA player, right? Like, they were grinding their entire lives. Like, if you are going to be in the NBA, you are in the gym 2 to 3 times a day, every day. Mm. You do not take days off, because days you take off, somebody else isn't. And like, when you get there, you're going to have more endurance than them and be better than them. And then also at the same time, it brings in the idea of like, okay, but what balance of work, time put in, and talent needs to be there? Just natural, you were born to do this, it comes to you easily, and how hard do you have to work to be better than someone who's just naturally good at this? Because I think Carmi is a good example of, I don't think he was naturally born to be the best chef on earth.
No, he absolutely learned it. I mean, they showed the flashback of him in New York City, working under the other chef, which was Joel McHale.
Yes.
He was collapsing and being berated, and he clearly wasn't as good then. And he definitely learned trade for sure.
And then also John Barenthal back in the Seven Fishes / Christmas episode, always a force when he's on screen, no matter what he is taking down. When he's throwing forks at Bob Odenkirk, I was like, oh my dude.
So this, cringy just, and awkward.
I know. Like, and the emotional meltdowns of this show usually don't feel like secondhand embarrassment. Mm-mm. They just feel like, oh no, these angry people are getting angry at each other again. That moment in that episode was that.
Yeah, that was tough.
Those were just some alphas being alphas, you know?
Can't have two alphas.
Can't have two alphas. Everyone knows that, okay? In the world of wolves and chefs.
You know, you mentioned John Bernthal being like this very aggressive force in anything he does. You know, I think of the first season of The Walking Dead, which we've brought up a bunch of times. He played Rick's
very
best
good.
Friend.
What are you gonna do? It is.
He played Rick's best friend, and he was very intense in that show towards the end of his run there. And he had the same intensity here. I was like, oh man, this is why he's so good. And he was in The Punisher, and he does similar things. And he's just, again, I think he's an underrated actor. I think he deserves more. I think he should have been in this show more. I know, obviously, it was in the future. He's passed
away in the
show.
I'm sort of glad he's not. I think he's a driving force in the background. Carmi is obviously thinking of him a lot.
Sure.
And the idea that they'll all never know exactly what was happening in his head right before he killed himself, I think, is something that the characters are never, ever going going to get over and is important for their journeys into wherever they go. I think one of the only weak sides of the second season was they had a like a B or a C story with Abraham and Tina that sort of just ended, and then they were back in and were less used as the season went on.
Yep.
I understand, though, you have to, like, the time in which their story would have kept going, especially Tina's, as she rises through the ranks, you are filling with Sugar stories. You're filling with Marcus stories. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an entire episode where Marcus is in Copenhagen, which is a great episode, and maybe you don't get it if Tina is in season two more. I do hope, though, in future seasons, we get a lot more Tina, because she and her actress, Liza Colon Zayas, is so good, and I'm rooting for her so much, but I know someone's gonna hurt her, and I that moment's gonna be heart-wrenching, and it's gonna happen at some point, and just being on this treadmill waiting for it to happen, it hurts me.
It hurts me. Not only my glutes, it hurts my soul.
And thighs.
You know, you say bringing up people who were used, it was like a C storyline, and then it kind of fell off. I got a little bit of that with Sydney and Marcus's stories. You know, they're immediately at the end, like, fighting for some reason. But, you know, a couple of, maybe one or two episodes earlier, they were very infatuated with each other, you know?
Yeah.
I want to know what happened there, but they didn't give us that.
No, I think it was a byproduct of Sydney's anxiety, social anxiety,
sure.
And Marcus not really, and he's off kilter as well with his family situation. Mm-hmm. It was just, and they were in a pressure cooker, literally and figuratively.
You're right.
One where it is clear that, like, if you don't keep a level head, or if you don't get yelled at and have the wherewithal to be like, yes, chef, and not be like, how about you F yourself, then then things can go wrong very quickly. And at the same time, like, Oliver Platt's Uncle Jimmy, I'm glad that he was there at the end too. He's less of a driving force. He's just sort of there. He's the money man. I love Oliver Platt to death. I think he's great in every role he ever does. And him falling off a little bit, I didn't. All of the falling off, I'm slightly complaining about, but at the same time, I'm glad it happened because they, I think in the second season, really came to understand who the true breakout star of this show is, and they really focused on him, and that is Richie.
Yes, I was gonna say, we need to talk Richie. Cousin.
Yeah,
wonderful. Oh, his arc is just beautiful to watch.
His episode?
Oh, the Forks episode?
Kept waiting for something to go terribly wrong.
No, I didn't want it. No.
When he put the tray of the deep dish stuff behind his back, I was like, oh, that's falling.
Yeah, yes, so did I, but I was like, no, don't fall.
When he's driving quickly, singing Taylor Swift, I was like, oh, he's going to run into something and die.
Oh, God.
Like, he's getting arrested, or and that episode, you know, Jillian Jacobs calls him and tells him that she's been proposed to and is getting remarried, and he just goes back in and keeps polishing forks.
Just grinding. You know, he's realizing his missteps in the past and coming to terms with it, but I think also, you know, people actually gave him a chance in that restaurant, you know, regarded as one of the best restaurants in the world. And I think he appreciated that chance, and he wanted to show people that he could actually do it.
Oh my God, dude, him waking up by himself at 5:45 because he wants to be there. The GM who he was talking to, played by Rene Goubet, I don't know if that's how you say that name, but it's a very fun word to say, who was telling him, like, this is Super Bowl every night here, dude. Like, you just got to come correct.
That's great. I love that. It's Super Bowl every night. That's a great.
Sarah Ramos as Jessica, the person running the kitchen, is so good. Everyone's being very nice to Richie. And then out of nowhere, he walks into the back and Olivia Colman is Chef Terry, and their conversation is so good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is... out of all the episodes of television of this year, my favorite two episodes are, but prior to watching The Bear, were absolutely Succession episodes, the finale and Connor's wedding. I think Forks, I don't know if it's better, but it's my favorite episode of television this year. It's one of my favorite television episodes of all time.
Yeah,
I think it was so stellar and out of nowhere good, and cements Eben Moss Bacharach, him playing Richie, as one of the best characters on television right now and one of the best actors working today.
Yeah, and his scene where he took over for Sydney in the final episode
and finally killed it, dude,
and killing it, but finally getting to drive the ship, and he just killed it because he watched the girl at the other restaurant.
He asked questions,
paid attention to the details. We find out he's incredibly good with people. He's a people person, and they kept hinting at that all season, but they never gave him a chance to show it, and they finally did. And oh, it was so rewarding at the end.
As he screams Taylor Swift, like, I've never been rooting for somebody more in my entire life.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just curious to see how it's going to go after that explosive fight with Carmi.
He's doing so well, but Carmi is locked in the fridge. A metaphor, perhaps.
Yeah, for being locked in his own goddamn brain.
Yeah, and not ever getting out of his own way, and not being able to juggle parts of his life and at all, right? And Care Bear is not happy with him because of the words that he said. Her actress also so good. And this family is just constantly falling apart, but succeeding slowly but surely, which is just a really interesting dynamic to watch. And then also, we can talk about the Bolognese episode where the crew is awaiting a do-or-die fire suppression test.
Oh, yes. That's a good one, too.
That's weird for me.
That makes sense.
Because I run a business that does fire suppression tests on hood systems. So, like, them learning that, again, you know, the term that I don't think I'm going to repeat here as to what John Barenthal's character was trying to do, but basically burn down the restaurant using just making the fire suppression bad and hoping that the building burns down. So that was weird for me to watch from that perspective.
I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, this is a little too close to work for me, but that's okay.
You have some insight.
I do have some insight. Yeah. Those things have to work, or you could burn down any place ever. But yeah, that last episode, friends and family night at the Bear, them trying to get a Michelin star. The moment where Sydney walks by a restaurant where she was asking questions and working a little bit, a really good restaurant that is now closed.
Yeah.
Like, just reminding us, the audience, that it doesn't matter how good a restaurant is. It's a business with incredibly low margins, and they fail at a rate that is exponential.
Yeah, that was sad because they showed a little flash of the woman from earlier in the season, and she was so on it, and that restaurant was so top notch, and to see that was really heartbreaking. I'm sure, you know, her character's like, oh shit, you know, is this just gonna be where all of our hard work goes? This fucking
right. We sign? Could succeed 100% and still fail.
Oh yeah, yeah. And let's just talk for a second about how absolutely fucking baller that restaurant looks after the renovation.
Oh
yes.
Oh my god. I want to go to that restaurant, please.
I want it. Where'd they film it?
I don't know. I want to go to a very nice restaurant and spend $1 million. This show has made me want to do.
Yeah, right. You know, I'm happy that my girlfriend is very intense on, like, these really excellent food experiences. And
foodie, baby!
Yeah, she's a foodie by all means. And not just, like, good food. You know, food that's presented well. It's an experience when you go there.
Yes,
you know,
we've talked about experience.
Yeah.
People don't talk enough about the experience.
Well, we sure as heck did.
Well, we talk about it all the time. Because
we want to go to the French Laundry. We talked about this.
Yes, dude. God, I want to go to the French Laundry. So, gosh dang. something bad.
Before meeting my girlfriend, I didn't know that that literally was like in her like 3-year plan. And yes, take me with you.
Yes. I was in Yountville, California. I was standing in front of it and I was like, I will be eating here one day. I swear to God.
I swear to God, I will dump my savings into this place.
Let's talk about Christopher Storer for a second, the main writer and director and showrunner of the series. A complete success. Mm. A lot of people are watching it. Yes Chef is sweeping the nation. Yeah. And
huge buzz,
guys. And I hope they just know what they have and they just keep pumping out these seasons as long as they are good. Because again, the last episode is very open-ended. Like, Richie is succeeding at the highest level and then calls Carmi his mom. And Carmi does not like that. He's not a fan. And they say a lot of very mean things to each other.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. But at the end of that fight, though, you know, Carmi's freaking out because he's still obviously trapped in the fridge. But Richie is getting him riled up. Richie just keeps reiterating that he loves him. I love you. Carmi says, you would be nothing without me. Richie, I love you. Cousin, I love you. And he just keeps saying it, just cementing that, he is grateful probably for what Carmi has done for him over the past two seasons. And it's just, Carmi is so blind. So he's like seeing red in this moment. And it's really unfortunate that he's saying all these terrible things. And it just gets blown out. But I hope they resolve it in another season. But I'm excited to see what they do with it. I really, really am.
From there, a line that I keep thinking about is when he says, when did we start buying Heinz ketchup?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, like those little moments of he's letting things fall through the cracks and he knows that this restaurant will live or die with his sheer effort and he's not giving as much as he needs to.
Mm-hmm.
The first season of The Bear was very much more about Carmi than the second season was. Like the first season of The Bear was leading up to that moment where Carmi is in AA and does that monologue that mm-hmm. wins him awards, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And the second season really opens it up more into an ensemble cast where everybody, especially Sydney, less Sydney, but more Richie, matters just as much as Carmi does. But at the same time, this show, I was going to say the show lives or dies with Carmi's eventual redemption, but that's really not true. It's Mm-mm. It's more so like his redemption does need to happen. He needs to be a full-on human being and understand the world around him does not revolve around him only, but to be the best in the world, I assume this will happen at some point. Like he'll do a long monologue about, turns out being the best in the world is just about family. He could have learned this from Fast and the Furious.
It's about family.
Family. Vin Diesel.
Yeah, Vin Diesel pops in, did you say family?
Right, like I assume the end of this show, however many seasons it goes, is Richie and Sydney not working there anymore. Mm. And him passing it on to Tina and Marcus and Sugar to run, and Carmi going off and maybe becoming like Anthony Bourdain-esque, where he's more of a TV star than he is a chef. But Richie goes and works at the best kitchens in the world because he has earned it and he can do so, as does Sydney. Like, I feel like that is where it's going, but that's 50% of me thinks that. And the other 50% of me thinks this show ends with Carmi burning the world to the ground.
Oh God, I really hope not. But I mean, honestly, that would make it kind of interesting now that I think about it.
Right. I'm saying, and that 50-50 split is why this show is so good, because both things are incredibly viable.
Yeah, and you know, the ultimate ending would be if he meets the same fate as his brother, you know, consumed by this business.
Oh shoot.
That would be devastating, but like I could see it happen.
I don't want it though.
Neither do I.
that'd be bad, and I don't want it.
That would be bad, but I you know what? I think it depends on how they set it up if that actually works or not.
Yeah, I mean, this show, I already said it. This show is really great.
Yeah.
I understand the barrier to entry and how everyone's yelling and it's anxiety ridden and some people just don't want that after a long day at work to sit down and then watch people be at work and mad at each other.
Yeah, right.
I get it. But I also think, and you know, we were also making fun of this show a little bit last episode because of the whole like Chicago is a character kind of thing.
Yeah.
But at the same, which is still very funny. Every time it does like a montage over the city, I'm like, Chicago. Yeah. But also, I think it's cool that Christopher Storr is taking risks. Right? Like to do an entire Marcus episode in Copenhagen with a few flashbacks here or there, to do an entire episode with Richie and a few flashbacks here or there as well. Those are risks. Those are bold maneuvers. It's going down a path where he's saying, listen, Carmi's not the main character anymore.
No.
He is part of an ensemble cast. Yes, he is number one on the call sheet. And yes, his ending is what will affect the ending of this show the most, but we're also hopefully having you here for the other people who are surrounding him, and their success is equal, if not more important than Carmi's.
Absolutely. And after all, the show is called The Bear, and The Bear is not Carmi. The Bear is
it's the restaurant, baby.
Yeah. And The Bear is the Barrazzo family, and they're cousins and their family and their people, their friends, everyone is The Bear. And all we want is The Bear to succeed.
That's correct. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about how bingeable shows are hard for podcasts.
Yeah. So we were talking about this pre-recording, and you know, I love a bingeable show. Like, let me watch everything all at once, please. That would be amazing. That's how I watched Breaking Bad. It was amazing. However, it's bad for podcasting.
it's really bad for podcasting, man. Like, we were going to do two shows at once. We were going to do this and Secret Invasion, but turns out Secret Invasion is hot garbage. So I just didn't want to, one, watch it, or two, do a podcast about it.
Yeah.
So I just wish that this The Bear show version of the podcast could have been like 10 episodes long and over 10 weeks, and looking forward to them. You know, back in the day when Netflix started releasing shows that were bingeable and it was a new thing, it was amazing, right? Mm. Like the fact that you could just sit and watch it all in one block of time was awesome. But I think I'm sort of done with it. Like I
enjoyed,
and maybe it's only because we make a podcast about television shows and it's a little bit, I'm biased is what I'm saying.
Oh, same. But you know, it's funny. The shows that I enjoyed binge watching on Netflix when they came out were shows that actually were week to week episodes. It's just that, you know, I got behind and I wanted to catch up all at once. Like, that's the kind of binging I like. If it's a new show, I would prefer the week to week release, especially because we do this podcast.
Right. And I mean, listen, stay tuned. Okay. We're going to be doing bants for the next few weeks, talking about our favorite episodes of television. That is back there. Talking about TV and movies and media, we're going to be here every week no matter what. But at the moment, the next show that we're going to talk about is a little bit up in the air, because you and I had a conversation before this started where we were like, what are we going to do today? Are we just going to talk about the first half of the show? And I was like, well, did you watch it? And you were like, yeah. And I was like, well, me too. So let's just talk about the show. I don't like, it is what it is. We're talking about the entirety of The Bear, because it'd be weird to have watched the finale and not weirdly get into it.
Yeah, and it was hard. You know, I had watched a couple episodes ahead of you when we did the first episode of this season, and it was hard not to try and bring something up that comes up down the road because it drastically changed things. And so I'm with you, man. I want the week to week. What's the next show? Do we have a show?
No, not really. If you want to let us know or go vote for the next show, you can join our Discord by also joining our Patreon at patreon.com/HBOBOIZ. It's $1 a month and you get all those things, podcasts that we make prior to them coming out on the main channel, plus again joining the Discord and getting to talk to us all day or day and letting us know what you'd like us to watch, and then us probably being like, I don't really want to watch that.
What great reactions.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm about to start watching The Witcher Season 3.
Oh, yes.
But I don't know. Maybe. If I watch it the first episode and it's still very good, I might bring it up again. It's just very sad knowing that this is Henry Cavill's last season and what they're doing with that whole thing. You know, it's a tough time for premier television, right? Like, we're living in a post-Game of Thrones era where the House of the Dragon is on HBO and they're also going to make another Game of Thrones show, which, by the way, I want to watch all of them, and we're going to talk about all of them. But that level of money and that level of storytelling is now being applied, and every other show is being put up against it. So it's hard, because you're not going to make a show that's going to has a good chance of falling through the cracks.
Yeah. And there are other shows that I watch that are one-offs or, you know, a bingeable season of something, but it's not like a character development type show. It's shows like Clarkson's Farm or The Grand Tour.
Or Taskmaster. Taskmaster is my favorite vibe at the moment. In fact, it was on my list of underrated TV shows. We just recorded our top five underrated TV shows of all time. And it was on my list of 18 that I then had to parse down. Taskmaster was there because I think it's one of the best shows on television that just Americans aren't watching very often. But yeah, I mean, there's a whole bucket of them, those shows.
Yeah. And I would love to talk about The Grand Tour, Clarkson's Farm, or shows like that. But I just don't think it makes good podcasting for shows like that. There's nothing really, you just highlight and recover what happened during the episode. But like shows like this, what could happen? Character development, things like that. It's a lot more to it. And, you know, there is other stuff that I watch, though.
Sure. But I think it's important that we talk about also like what the audience wants to hear, which is, again, why you can tweet at us. We're also on TikTok, and Adam posts a bunch up there, which is really nice of him. And then again, in the Discord, which is $1 a month at patreon.com/HBOBOYZ.
Yes. And follow our TikTok at the HBOBOYZ. Again, try and post at least weekly on there. I know it's definitely not enough for the algo, but it's fine. We'd like to thank our patrons: Sunshine, Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, James Watch My Dong, Chris Wood, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Jewers, Major Woody, and Carol Andreas. And if you'd like to add some more money to that pool, I will read your name at the end of the episode, and it will be very wonderful and very fun.
Twisted Metal is coming out in for Peacock in July 27th. It's what's gonna make me get a Peacock subscription. So maybe
it's probably gonna be terrible, but I really want to watch it.
Yeah, I'm gonna give the first episode a try for sure.
Like, that game was prolific in my childhood. Oh man, I loved Twisted Metal. It was so good. I mean, the little preview, it gave me some high hopes, but also gave me some pretty low hopes. So.
Right. Yeah. Fallout game needs to come out, or not game, show needs to come out soon.
Yeah, and that's another one that I think it's going to be fucking awful.
But I think it's going to be bad, yeah.
The set looked so good. It looked so good.
Yeah, I think it's going to be terrible. Yeah,
I think so too.
Okay, bye.